So in the 13th chapter, of the Bhagavad Gita, there are four verses which describe the qualities of a devotee, and I want to read those. So, 13th chapter entitled Nature, the Enjoyer and Consciousness, text number 8-12. Amanitvam adam vitvam ahim siksanti rajamam ayupasanam sucham Staryam atma vinigraha Indiyakti su vairagyam Anahankar evacha Jannarachacharavadi Dukkadushna darsadam Ashaktirana disvanga putra dara grihadisu Nityam cha samachittatvam Istanistu papattisu Mayi chananya yogena Bhakti rava avyab Vicharini, Vivikta Desa Sevitvam, Arati Jana Sansari. Ajana Jana Nityatvam, Tatva Gyanatta Darshanam, Etat Gyanamite Praktam, Ajana Yat Atunyata. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth and death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest, even-mindedness amidst pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. Om Ajnana Timandasya Kendra Sakaya Chakshurunnitamya Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was speaking about knowledge, and he said that when we are approaching the Supreme Lord and his devotees for knowledge, then that knowledge will develop. He says, but if we are looking elsewhere for knowledge, then we find ourselves poorly supplied, and also the ability to retain that knowledge will become diminished. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, avritam jnana ittena yoginam nityavairina kama ittena kuntaya duspurena nadena cha. It is stated that this kama rupa, or this form of lust, is burning within the heart like a fire. And avritam jnana maitena, avritta means to cover. It covers our knowledge. So as our consciousness becomes filled with desire to enjoy the material energy, we forget the spiritual reality. It is the nature, automatic. It is not like that one can retain. Then gradually our priorities begin to shift, and happiness in this world becomes our aim. And it is amazing how much we can become influenced by the desire to enjoy this world. How much we are hoping that it will work out, because it is possible. I might be lucky. I might be. So the chance is there. Therefore, let's try. actually, we see that people spend their life trying to fix the material world in different ways. Governments, they spend all their time meeting how to adjust things, how to make it better. At home, we are making so many arrangements how to adjust things. So we're always busy trying to set straight what is wrong in this world. That's what we're trying to do. But actually, this is not at all the purpose of this world. The purpose of the world is not that we are meant to try and correct the things that are wrong in this world, but rather that the world, the material world, is to correct the things that are wrong in us. That's what it's made for. So, while we are thinking, I'm going to fix the material world, meanwhile the material world is fixing us, actually. And that's what it's made for. Because the entire material energy is there to teach us a lesson, to bring us to the point where we realize that we are not independent. The material energy is meant to bring us to the point where we become desperate, where we feel that things are totally out of control. And just then, as we are looking at the situation in great fear of what's going to happen, we realize there's nothing I can do about it. It's just like the world economy. We are printing more and more money. Everyone is just printing more and more notes. Somehow or other, it goes on. But there is no real wealth to cover all the paper. And then, somehow or other, America is living on so many loans. And in this way, the whole world is locked in. Because the whole world has become the bankers of America, actually. And everything is in this way, hanging on the dollar. And then one day, the Americans, they don't mind if the prices go up. That's okay. They don't mind if the interest percentages go down. They don't mind if the taxes increase, but they mind one thing, if the stock goes down. And when the stock goes down, it is a major problem. Therefore, they have an arrangement, they have a special agency, which is meant to keep the stock, to keep the stock at an artificially high price. Yes. They pump some money into the stock market. They give entrepreneurs special benefits if they don't dump the stock. In this way, the stock agency tries to keep the stock Wall Street from falling. And they say, I just read it today in a book on the airport. That's why I know everything about the fall of the dollar now, you may wonder. And it said, finally, that if however the stocks drop more than 10%, then they can't hold it anymore and it gets out of control. And then nobody knows what to do next. No bank can save the day. That's when it's going to be a big crash. So, it was an authoritative book written by a journalist who specialized in these things. It was interesting, I thought, to learn something about economy, about our artificial economy. And it can get out of control, and we think we are in control, and we think we have everything under control. But if the dollar goes down too much, we will feel it everywhere, even in Sweden, where nothing ever happens. Yes. So that is the case, you know. Therefore, nothing in the material world is sure. Nothing. The only thing that is truly sure is Krishna. And that is what we have when we get caught out in material circumstances. Then we remember Krishna. So that's what it's for. That's why first we are given a false sense of security, and then it all collapses, and then we can only turn to Krishna. That is the design of the material world. It's for that. It is for that. Murphy's Law, whatever can go wrong, will go wrong. Right? Have you heard it? It is the material world. Yes, so the real purpose of the material world is that we remember Krishna. And there are qualities in us that are favorable, that will help us to create a favorable condition for remembering Krishna. And some of them are mentioned here. I'll just take a few because there are really too many. But it says tolerance is one of them. Yes, this is a fact. If we learn to just tolerate matras prasas sukuntaya sitasya sukadukada agamataya nityas tamti piksas abhata, that one must learn to just tolerate the differences between summer and winter, and just without being too much disturbed. One may have to make some arrangements, but it cannot become once all and everything. To a certain extent, we have to tolerate. That is the point, because otherwise, there is no end to it. There is no end to what one needs to do to adjust things. Then we keep on adjusting and adjusting and adjusting, and all our energy goes in that, and it's still not enough. This is maybe the Western world. The Western world has adjusted and adjusted. And we've come a long way since the Middle Ages. We are highly advanced, but then we have again new problems. New problems that come from the modern technological society and so on. And then to solve those, and it's always a new challenge, new battle to fight. So it all stems from simply not tolerating. So we have to learn to tolerate more. To be simple, it's also said. Simplicity. Simplicity, arjavam. It is called arjavam. It's explained that if a person is very simple, then you can go to him and say, what is your greatest secret? And he'll tell you right away, because he has no secret. He has no secret, nothing to hide. That is simplicity. So simplicity exists only when there's purity, when there's nothing to hide. When there is a lot of sin in us, a lot of degraded activity, then there's so much to hide, you see. And then it creates a lot of tension. Then the mask, then he lies, then he eats so many things. So then life becomes more and more complex. And one lives a life of pretense. But in simplicity we can live a life of being very natural. So that is very, very nice and pleasant, actually, to be very natural in this way. Simple. So Vaishnavas are meant to be like that. Vaishnavas are meant to simply serve. Yes. To simply spend their times serving other Vaishnavas. Because it is through the Vaishnavas that one takes Krishna. Thus the Vaishnavas making that their meditation. A Vaishnava is not one who is so attached to his own ideas Of course, everyone has its own ideas. We have our own opinions, our own ideas. But a Vaishnava is ready to put these aside if the will of the devotees is to do something else. But if the devotees say, no, it's not entirely the way you think it is, it's a little different. All right. So that is again part of simplicity. It is of course also maybe humility and pridelessness or absence of false ego. These are all sort of intricately related. Because false ego is all about I am, I and mine, aham mameti. I and mine is the most important. But how important are we really? Sometimes I remember those catacombs in Italy, you know, where you have all the skulls stacked upon each other. They open a wall and there's this, all these heads rolling out, all these bones rolling out, etc. And you see that in each of these was an individual with his own dreams, with his own little world. That some of them may have been poets, others may have been gardeners or whatever. Right? They may have been prominent people, but now, what is the meaning? What is the meaning? So when we think like that, then we can see our own life a little more relative. What we're doing, you know. I mean, are you going to make a mark on history? Yeah, are you? And for how long? Yeah. For how long will people remember Shakespeare? Did you study Shakespeare? It's already forgotten. The most educated know a few quotes, right? And a rare person who would know more than that. Right? But gradually, personalities get forgotten. Who was Marcus Aurelius? Right? Who was he? Who was Napoleon again? Some guy somewhere. So gradually even the famous people in history are forgotten. So why make a mark on history? Is it so important? Yeah. I'm going to make a mark in history. Is that really the goal of life? That's the question. Of course, if we make a mark, a mark as a servant of Krishna, that's different. Because then it's not about our glory. Just like Prabhupada obviously made a mark on history. He is still being worshipped now. And he still has followers all over the world and so on. So he made a mark in history beyond his own lifetime. His books are still being widely distributed and read and so on. He made a mark in history. But the mark he made in history was not for his own glory, but was for the glory of Krishna. But that is different. He also got glory in doing that, but that was not at all his objective. His objective was the glory to Krishna. So that is different. That kind of mark in history is let Krishna be known, let Krishna be glorified. Let the Supreme Lord be glorified. That makes more sense. In this 13th chapter of the Gita, we are dealing with the field and the knower of the field. It is that there is a field and there are two knowers of the field. One knower of the field are we, the field of our activities. Yes. And the other knower of the field is the Supreme Lord. Now, one of these two knowers is the proprietor, and the other is the cultivator. if our body is the field, because whatever we do through our body. Right? Our body and what we can do through our body is the field. Whatever we can touch, that is the field. Fine. But it is said we are not the proprietor of the field. Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is the proprietor of the field. And we are the cultivator, the caretaker on his behalf. I always like the statement in the Bible that man was given dominion over all that be, included all the animals, and then immediately they ate them. Right? But they were made in charge of looking after all the animals. Can you please, can you look after my cat and dog, and then you come back from holidays, and then they eat it. So, how would that be? Sure, but this is outrageous. I said, well, this is supposed to be a care for a few weeks. So, I always thought this was a, that's interesting. So it's okay. Please look after all the animals. Yes, yes, don't. Sure, don't do that. Well, what to say? So Krishna is the proprietor. That we understand. And when we understand that, then these qualities also sort of start to make sense. Because then humility makes sense. Many years ago, I saw a television program, I don't know how many years ago, 100 years ago or something like that. And I saw this television program, and there was one man who went for a job interview. And the person who was interviewing was sitting behind a screen. And you just heard his voice coming out of a loudspeaker. So the man who came for the job interview, he came in like, yes, sir, thank you very much, please. And he said, no, sir, thank you very much, please. Yes, sir, thank you very much, please. No, sir, thank you very much, please. And we just go, nay. And he says, yes, sir, thank you very much, please. Okay. Hey, the bird. All these things were barked out of the loudspeakers, and then the other guy was just like that. So, it was really giving a nice illustration of what humility is looked upon. It's like, when you're humble, everyone steps on you. Right? Some guy holding his hat, and everyone is just treating him like a doormat, and that's about it. So humility is generally not seen as a good quality. Is that what humility really is? Humility simply means that we give up independence. That is humility. Humility does not necessarily mean that you bow your head and hold your head and say, thank you very much, please. But humility, it truly means that you give up a separate agenda and that you just say, okay, Krishna's agenda. All right, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna. Because when you read the Bhagavad Gita, well, it's like nice, but some things are like, this is a bit too much. Some things are a bit. Here it says freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest. So, what is this? From seen from the male perspective, but can also be seen from the female perspective. Kunti Devi had the Pandavas as her son. And at one point, Kunti Devi is praying, please cut these ties of family affection so that I can just focus on you. It doesn't mean that we are not affectionate, but it means that it's not the all in all. Not the all in all. It's not the end of the end all of everything to have a baby. It's not the end all of everything. My family. Because what can the family do? We're all in the same boat in material bodies. It's a temporary and bound to suffer. So that's not a solution. If you think, yes, it's there, the family, in boy meets girl, and now there is a reason to live. Now there is a reason to work. Now there is a reason to exist. Now we make a beautiful home. Now we have found a reason, right, that makes life worthwhile. Since the day I met you, life came true. Before I didn't know what to do. But since I met you, everything is new. And so on. Love, love, love. That the refrain, of course, can be of love. And then makes life worth living. Love. All about giving. Then at that stage, I blow the bubble gum into a big balloon, right? And then with a big crescendo, it goes like, bosh. Finish. Doesn't matter. Try again. Try your second marriage. Always works. If not, as they say, it starts in courting and it ends up in court. Anyway, such is life in this world. Not always. Sometimes it goes on until the 55th wedding anniversary, and it is skin in skin, bone in bone. I'm sorry to say something. It's not that I'm against anybody. It's not that, but. It's just not the all in all. As long as we see that there is more to life, that there is also something after this life, something greater, a greater goal in life than just a material goal, then we don't deny anybody, you know, comfort in this world and the family, but and we think this is the all in all, then we will be greatly disappointed, and then we are in illusion. That will not work. Yeah. So this topic is discussing knowledge. We need knowledge. Without knowledge, how can we figure it out? On our own, we don't get this knowledge. This knowledge comes from Krishna. Krishna reveals knowledge to us. On our own, we can maybe get some knowledge. Like, I have, over the years, given many lectures with microphone stands that just do this. Right? And in the beginning, I didn't know it. And eventually, you know, you just go down, and I started to get back problems. And I realized that after some time, that it was the microphone stand. And eventually, I figured it out that okay, when the screw is rotten, at least you make this longer, but it still sort of works if you pray to Krishna at the same time. So, in this world, that may be knowledge. Right? Some knowledge about microphone stands I might have. I'm sure I've seen Eddie there with this camera. For many years, he has knowledge about this camera, and no one could get it started, and he can still get it going. I used to have a car, and it was my first car, though it was not a real expensive one. And the only way it would start, if you take a hammer and you go to the left wheel in the back and you hit behind the wheel, and then after on something. The guy who sold it to me showed me where to hit. And if you hit there, then it would start. And I had that car for 3 years. There was absolutely no problem. But you had to start first hit to that hammer. I've never known why, but you know, but somehow or other it worked. So that was knowledge, you know. That was knowledge. But this kind of knowledge is not real knowledge. We're talking about knowledge that helps us to make real progress, not knowledge about the temporary. What's the point if we go to the railway station and you just buy a book about the railway station, and for 6 years you study the railway station and you get a PhD on the railway station? Well, no, Dr. Frog, that's not very useful, right? Then we would say that was a pretty useless PhD, you know, studying this railway station. I mean, you know, I mean, for 6 years you studied it, and I mean, other people, you know, use it for 15 minutes a day, and that's it, right? And go in and out, and that's all we want to know about. So what's the point in putting so much energy in the temporary? Some energy has to go into the eternal, and that is part of the case. Of course, the temporary also comes forth out of the eternal. And then the temporary is meant to be used for the eternal. Like if this camera shows pictures about Krishna, then it's really nice. If the camera is used to just show mundane things, then it just takes us away into forgetfulness. Then we become covered. So many movies. Everyone is just watching movies. And movies are very strong. They go deep into the consciousness, almost as deep as real life experiences. It's amazing how strong it is. I mean, I see movies on the plane sometimes because there are so many screens nowadays. Everyone has his own screen, so can you imagine? They're not trying to watch a movie, but there are about 30 movies going on in your field of vision. And wherever I turn my head, there is a movie. So I'm watching, without the sound, but I'm watching three at once. You know, Harry Potter. Gosh, you know, what a boring thing. And that pirate, what's his name again? With the eyeliners, you know. And all those things. They're always like medieval battlefields of, you know, nowadays. They have lots of these war scenes of guys, of a thousand guys hacking into each other with swords. That should also regulate the... on the plane you get a good idea of what's going there. And all that stuff is in there. Talking about planes, there was a story of a plane crash, and the plane crashed, and they had the black box inside, which gives the last little bit of information. And the control tower was asking the pilot, what was that song again? And the pilot said, you meant jingle bells, jingle bells. And then, plane crashed. That was the last exchange between the pilot and the control tower. So the whole world. I still remember a particular tune from a TV commercial about margarine, which I heard when I was a kid. And it's still in there. I can't get rid of it, you know. It's just junk mail, you know, just full of junk mail inside, right? I mean, I'm going to put a sticker on my head, you know. Please don't put in any junk mail. But it's full of junk mail, my head, and the situation. And not only mine, maybe yours too. So it's amazing how deep these things go. So, and I was looking at Harry Potter and the Lord of Darkness and things like this, Voldemort, and it's a pretty ghostly creature, actually. Someone could haunt you in the dreams. I think it's just also sweet and innocent, the whole thing, actually. It's not just entertainment, it's quite some. It creates a whole concept of a world of darkness. It's not just not auspicious, actually. Not auspicious. Nor is these guys from the Caribbean, you know, there's a lot of that stuff too, right? At one point the guy's beard is all strength and it goes into the face of someone and then it grows into his nose like tentacles. Again, pretty ghostly. Or in one of these movies there was a little hand that stayed alive after they chopped it off. The hand just kept on coming. And they couldn't get rid of that little hand. At one point, the guy's fighting with the hand and putting it in a drawer. And he's got the hand in the drawer, and then just moments later, there's a little hand again. But, I mean, these are actually quite intense things if you watch them. I sometimes, because we're not so accustomed as devotees, I have not watched so many murder movies, etc. And sometimes I see on the plane people like sipping a cup of tea, you know, while someone is just like, wow. And I'm sweating very much. I'm not so used to it. But apparently they watch these things every day, so it doesn't mean anything. Just that we could consider that what we put in our consciousness goes a long way. And if we put more real knowledge into our consciousness, it works, not only when we hear it, but it has a great effect also after. It sort of subconsciously starts to work in our consciousness. In this way, by reading Bhagavad Gita, we get greatly, our thoughts are getting purified. So it's very potent. And it then removes our bad karma from the heart. This is really what we are trying to achieve. Okay, any questions or comments? So, I guess my main theme was the eternal side next to the temporary side. Without condemning the temporary side out of a narrow-minded perspective from against the rules, but more from, everything has its consequences. Whatever you do, it has its consequences for our consciousness. So let us fill our consciousness with things that are really positive for us to give a real positive result. That makes sense, actually. The modern world is amazing, right? Because of all the, it's all about entertainment, this, that, and many things are creating inauspicious influences in consciousness. It's said there are three things. Chanakya Pandit said, who was a great learned personality, he said there's three things. If you think about them, you will attract them. He said, if you talk about them, then you will attract them. That's what he said. Snake, ghosts, and women. Not that these three are all in the same category, of course, that's not what we're saying, but that's what Chanakya Pandit mentioned. So, the last, the last
lesser pedigree may be better than the first two. The first one, to admit that. But still, the point is there, besides the joke. The point is there that we must be careful what we place into our consciousness. Because it has a much greater effect than we think it has. Therefore, to read Bhagavad Gita is really not a luxury, but is actually of great importance. Any questions? Yeah?
Can you say something about how Krishna can fulfill all our desires?
How can Krishna fulfill all our desires? Because Krishna is much more wonderful than anything that you find in this world. For example, when Krishna wears jewels, then the jewels become more beautiful. Because Krishna is more beautiful than the jewels. Usually it's the other way around. So in that way, Krishna exceeds all the greatness of this world. So therefore, we may have so many desires, but then gradually our desires begin to shift towards Krishna. The more we get in contact with Krishna, the more our interest changes, and therefore other desires just disappear. Other things begin to look empty, meaningless, and then only Krishna and service to Krishna looks meaningful. So in this way, Krishna fulfills all desires. When we come to the point that we have no other desire than to serve Krishna, then we become fulfilled. And that will gradually happen because Krishna is more wonderful than anything else. Therefore it's said, Krishna is a thief. He steals away our vision. He steals away our ears. He steals away the vision of the new season. He steals away the ears of one who hears him. Krishna steals all our senses. In this way, one can become fulfilled. But maybe not immediately, maybe not on the first day, or in the first year, or even in 20 years. But it can be done in a lifetime. And within that lifetime, one will notice many changes. Many changes. The more one spends time in serving Krishna, the more one realizes how real fulfillment lies there. In the beginning, that fulfillment may be more theoretical. Last night, we were speaking about that in the heart, this is a metaphor, it's not physically, but it's like figuratively speaking. In the heart, it is like there are two chambers. There's an external chamber and an internal chamber. It is said that Krishna must enter into the internal chamber of our heart, the internal chamber, not the external. The external chamber is the beginning, when we are convinced about Krishna consciousness that it's right, but emotionally we are not yet so deep in our relationship with Krishna. So when we are practicing Krishna consciousness in that stage where we are convinced, then we struggle. We struggle and we are not fulfilled. All our desires are not fulfilled. But when we come to the point that Krishna is the only thing in the private chamber in our hearts, and there's no other desires, then we can be fulfilled. That will happen. The more we are trying to become the personal servant of Krishna. Bhakti yoga, therefore, should not just be seen as a process, but it should also be seen, we should come to the point where we are not just following a process to become purified, but where we are becoming the personal attendant of Krishna. Everything is done. Yes, I'm the personal attendant. A personal attendant is attentive to the needs of the master. That's the word attendant. So a devotee should become a personal attendant of Krishna. And just whatever Krishna requires, so he becomes very sensitive to Krishna's needs. It is at that stage that one becomes fulfilled. And then increasingly so. I agree with you. Yeah, that's very good. Everybody knows it anyway. That's funny, huh? Because there was a cartoon, and these two people were sitting next to each other, and they have thought bubbles above their head. Yeah? And in these thought bubbles, they were hiding their most private thoughts. And they had the same things in the thought bubbles. Yeah. Because everybody, kids is raising their hands as I'm raising their hands. Anyway, the thought bubbles above our heads are just like they're the same. So yes, we are all very similar. We all have the same tendencies, the same nature. Still, we are hiding them from each other. Everyone in this world is looking to be praised. Everyone is looking for recognition. It's like a very deep driving force in everyone's mind to try and be for some recognition, for being great. You see it already in children. Look. I can ride a bicycle. I mean, you could say to a kid, look, you know, millions and millions of people can ride a bicycle. But no, you have to say, wow, no, can you ride a bicycle? Wow, you're doing it so nice, amazing. Right? That's what you have to do. Yeah. Can you do that? So, everyone likes to be the center of the attention. Everyone wants to be recognized as great. People dress up for it. People do so many things to somehow or other find recognition. So this is a deep drive in us. It comes forth out of the fact that we are in competition with Krishna. Krishna is meant to be the center of the attention. But somehow or other now, in this world, we are in competition with Krishna. And because we are in competition with Krishna, we want to be the center of the activity of everyone. Yeah. And if we're not, we're suffering. We may be shy and we may be afraid to be in the center. So we say, well, no, I don't want to be in the center. I rather want to be in the background. I don't want to be seen at all. But that's not really true, because although we are in the background, we're not happy in the background. So our real desire is to be in the center, but that is covered by fear. That we will be exposed, because we are showing that we are greater than we are. We pretend. And then we're afraid to be exposed. So sometimes we're so afraid to be exposed that we'd rather stay in the background. But the ultimate desire is that we want to be glorified and recognized for our greatness. So that's the root desire. And some people, they are very upfront, and others are also desiring, but are too afraid to do it. So a simple person the definition of simplicity he gave us, one who is not pretending, one who is not trying to make any impression, one who is not interested in being more than he is, one who is completely what he is. Good in some areas, a fool in others. Right? It's hard to show people that you are a fool. But we all are a fool in some areas. Absolutely. We all do foolish things. So, in five commandments, is all your desires to be fulfilled. I have not read that, you know, because I have not read so much about Puri, to tell you the truth. But Puri, today I read about Jagannath Puri, and it says that Lord Brahma, there is a day of Brahma and a night of Brahma, which goes on for 1,000 cycles of 4 yugas. And during that time, the whole universe is going through a dissolution. There is a flame coming from the bottom of the universe and it becomes very hot. And on the heavenly planets, basically, they burn. So the whole world, according to the heavenly planets, burn. And then above the heavenly planets is the Maharloka. Their great sages are living, who are Prajapatis. These sages are also feeling the heat, but then they can go higher to Janaloka, and above Janaloka is Tapaloka, and then Satyaloka. So these very, very high platform where the sages reside, they are not getting affected, Janaloka. So the whole universe then becomes affected by the heat of this burning fire. Now I forgot your question. Hold on a minute.
I was wondering if they say that if you go around
Puri.
Probably of this fashion.
I'm back. Puri. So then, as it's said there, that when the whole worlds are destroyed and affected, so Jagannath Puri is protected by a spiritual banyan tree. And this spiritual eternal banyan tree keeps Jagannath Puri from being destroyed. Therefore, even when the universe is annihilated, Jagannath Puri is never annihilated. It always remains. So Jagannath Puri is a spiritual abode, right? It's not an ordinary abode. So by going around a spiritual abode, you become purified. In this way, all your desires will be fulfilled. Yes. Because you become a devotee of Krishna. So if you do parikrama of Puri, surely all your desires. Same as when you do any other form of devotional service. It's devotional service. And all your desires become fulfilled by devotional service. Now we are finished. Good, because I'm also finished. I can feel that. When you fly in one day and the morning you are somewhere in one country, and then you're in another country. I'm tired, but I'm a little spaced out, actually. I feel a little in the clouds. Maybe I'm not lent. Maybe I didn't lent. Yes. Patience is an inevitable quality. Patience is something. How can you like patience? Because patience is like you have to wait. Who wants to wait? Do you want to wait?
No.
I want it now. Right now. So patience is fundamentally something unpleasant. Waiting is unpleasant. It's not our nature to wait. We want things instant. No. Everybody who wants to wait, stand in queue. Who likes to stand in queue? But patience, it's in spiritual life, it comes from faith. Faith that at the end what you're going to get is worth it all. Makes that whole austerity of waiting worthwhile. So the more we are convinced that it's worthwhile, then we can have more patience and everything. Yes, Krishna consciousness is so wonderful, and if I would just make more of it, then it would be so much more wonderful. Therefore, I must patiently carry on practicing and try and achieve real Krishna consciousness, not just nibble a little bit on the side as I'm doing now, but I must do it because I'm sure that if I will, that what I get will be worth it. So faith is related to it. If you have strong faith that the end result is worth it, then we can wait. Then we can be patient. Because otherwise, nobody likes waiting. It's just, with time we become more aware of that also. That, you know, when, like a kid cannot wait for, how long can a kid wait? You know, cannot wait. But as we grow up, we can wait more. And with time we appreciate that not everything is achieved right away and that you have to build things up. So patience also, it comes with a long-term vision, obviously. You say, okay, I may not get the greatest result all in a day, but if I gradually build it up, I will get there. So by knowledge, we can also be more patient. So the more knowledge we have about the goal that we are meant to attain and the process that is part of it, then we understand. Just as we want to be a devotee of Krishna, but our hearts are still contaminated by the past, and therefore we cannot completely be it. So we are divided. We are two personalities. And we have a lower nature, and we don't believe in our lower nature, but still we have it. So then we know that you have to follow a process to purify the lower nature. And then we can take the Krishna purely. So it takes patience to undergo this purification. But it's logical. If you have a stain in your cloth, it's not just, finished. No, you have to, if it's a good one, it will come out if you really, whatever, you have to do something. Make an effort. So this is the thing. We are still impure, just out of habit, out of some contamination. But it will go. But I'm also impatient. Hate waiting. Very much. I want it also quick. And probably it's also and a lack of profit for being impatient. If he would have been too patient, and preferring being impatient. But for the mercy of Krishna, we must wait. Even if not that we like to wait, but we will wait because it's worth it. Krishna wants you to wait, because what you're going to get is going to be worth it. Okay, now it's floating.
Prabhupada, please.